Cincinnati Public Schools is working to finalize its budget with a number of unanswered questions. How will the district close a budget gap of more than $50 million? And what impact will the final state budget have on CPS and its students? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me to discuss the challenges facing the region's largest school district and how the difficult choices ahead are Cincinnati Public Schools Superintendent Shauna Murphy. Thanks so much for being here, Superintendent Murphy.
Thanks for having me.
Cincinnati Board of Education Vice President Eve Bolton, thank you for being here, too.
Good to be here. Thanks.
And Cincinnati Federation of Teachers President Julie Sellers. Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Superintendent Murphy, I mentioned that Cincinnati Public Schools is facing this budget gap. Explain why. What's going on there?
Yeah, absolutely. So several years ago, as we were coming through the COVID-19 pandemic, the district and other districts around the country received additional dollars in order to support student learning. And over the last couple of years, those dollars have been taken away, and we no longer have the same level of support that we did receive during and coming through COVID pandemic. And so what we've had to do the last couple of springs is then look at our budget to say, what are we going to be able to continue to do to move forward? Working really hard to prioritize our classrooms and student outcomes.
So it's a matter of there were additional supports that were added with that funding, and now that funding's gone. So what's going to happen with those additional supports?
Absolutely.
Board Vice President Bolton, explain what the Board of Education has done already to make budget cuts. Isn't there a hiring freeze for some positions?
Yes, there's a hiring freeze for some positions, and also our treasurer and our superintendent and our administrative team have been, authorized to do the research, do the work, and come back literally every board meeting with a report to keep us aware of those sorts of cuts. And the other reality, too, is that we still have to keep moving forward. And the reality for all of us is that not only do we have those ESSER dollars that the superintendent correctly pointed to, but we also have had a relatively flat budget for a number of years, haven't gone to the public for new money in, I think, 9 years now. And that's unusual for an urban district or any district. So now we're also faced with reduced amounts of money coming from both Columbus and the threat of reduced money also coming from the feds.
Hmm. Julie Sellers, as I mentioned, you are president of the Cincinnati Federation of Teachers. Are you concerned about teaching jobs, whether those could be eliminated, frozen?
I'm very concerned. I'm concerned about all of the additional supports and programming that our students have access to. I'm concerned about having larger class sizes, because we won't be able to keep the same level of staffing that we've had in the past.
Mm. Well, we're talking about Cincinnati Public Schools and the financial challenges facing the district. Do you have questions or comments? Call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. So, Superintendent Murphy, we just heard that you've been authorized to come back every board meeting with other ideas. What are some of the things you all are looking at? I assume that you're trying to make cuts as strategically as possible so you're not hurting students and outcomes and all those sorts of things.
That's correct. We are working really hard to prioritize the district's really instructional plan and our strategic plan. And so looking at the goals, the guardrails, the growth plan that the board has supported and told us this is what we need to focus on is what we're doing. So the last two springs, last spring it was $32 million. This spring it's $51 million. We started with administration at central office, and we did as much as we possibly could to avoid even having to do a review of the schoolhouse. But now we're at the point where we do have to look at what is happening at schools, what's working, what do we need to continue to push and to support and to provide resources for, and what are there some things that we could sunset and or maybe do at least a little bit differently?
When you say sunset, what do you mean by that?
So maybe there are some things that we have done over the years that we absolutely love and adore, but maybe at the same level, we won't be able to do that. I think we had previously talked about resource coordination, for example, which is something that I'm truly fond of in terms of trying to provide additional supports for young people. And a few board meetings ago, we had to make the decision that we were going to pull back a little bit on the level of resource coordination that we have in buildings. And so we have been able to make those adjustments, and we have been able to get the support around looking at that a little bit differently going into the upcoming school year.
One of the things that I know has come up is the school district's contract with Cincinnati Health Department for school nurses. Am I correct that the district decided to end that contract? Superintendent Murphy, how will that save money?
Yes, ma'am. So what we found in reviewing all of the contracts that we have in our school district is while we have definitely valued the partnership with the city and with the health department in particular, and we understand that there are services that our children need on a daily basis, our research took us to a place that showed we are able to do this internally at a much lesser rate. So shifting from working with the health department is going to save us about $2.4 million.
Do you think that students will get the same level of care? I'll ask you that, Julie.
I think that the level of care will be the same as prior to COVID. I know during COVID, they added additional nursing services, but in the last couple of years, many of those, they had shortages and were unable to fill positions. So now the district will have more control over that, how the services will be delivered at every school.
Mm-hmm. And Superintendent Murphy, will it change the number of nurses available at schools?
We don't believe it will change the number of nurses available. What I would remind the public is the fact that we do have healthcare centers on many of our campuses. And those centers are different agencies, different medical doctors that we partner with, nurses that we partner with to provide services to children. And so we will definitely continue that. Matter of fact, we just had a visit at Roberts Academy a few weeks ago where they opened their new clinic, and we're super excited about that partnership.
I've been to the clinic. I believe you have one at Euler, too.
We definitely have one at Euler. I believe Euler may have been our very first clinic, Euler or Rockdale, but definitely have a well-used clinic at Euler School.
Yeah. Well, we did ask the Cincinnati City Health Department for a comment about all this, and we got a statement from a city spokesman who said, the Cincinnati Health Department was surprised by CPS's decision to terminate our contract, but the city is committed to helping the affected nurses find other opportunities. We're able to extend the nurses' city contracts for at least 6 months, ensuring that they continue to receive pay and benefits they were counting on, and our goal is to offer other internal roles to as many of them as possible. So obviously the department's thinking about their employees, and you all had to think about budgeting and what made the most sense for the district, it sounds like.
Absolutely. It's not a fun topic, but something that we definitely have to do.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the state budget, because that could result in losing more funds on top of this $51 million gap, if I understand correctly. Board Member Bolton, what would the state Senate's version of the budget mean for Cincinnati Public Schools funding? And I ask that because I know there's been a bit of a moving target whose budget you look at and what impact it has on the schools.
Yeah, it's really a sort of a troika. So we've got the governor's budget, we've got the state house budget, and then we've got the state Senate budget. All of them have different kind of iterations. But if we look at the, generally speaking, all three represent less money for the children and the district. All three also offer far less discretion for the board and our administrative leadership. And seriously, all of them do threaten also the taxpayers' buildings that they have paid for to be raised and used as learning centers for our young people. So it's far less discretion, far less money. And most particularly, what's happening in all three is a commitment to build a private system that is publicly supported. We had hoped that the fair funding formula would be continuing. We hoped this was going to be the year that it would fully go into effect. And instead, it was reduced by $600 to $700 million. And the reality is, on the same line item where we lose money and other public districts lose money, the private sector schools, particularly the religious schools, are gaining almost $1 billion.
That leads us to a question from one of our listeners. Tim called. He did not stay on the line, but his question is, what is the connection between CPS funding and other public school funding and money going to vouchers? Is that what you're talking about there?
Yes, you'll recall. I mean, at least most of us will recall when vouchers started as a reason and as a possibility to increase choice, especially for families who might have been upset with the school that they had, or indeed the schools that they had were not providing the service, or families that were also economically challenged with the kinds of things that were happening. Now that's not at all what's happening. The majority of the people that are using vouchers were using and paying tuition to begin with. And so it's now, it's almost a class situation, maybe not a race situation, but a class situation of almost apartheid, where you're creating two systems of schools. And one is publicly funded to be private, and one is publicly funded to be public. And even the state legislators will tell you, we don't have enough money for two completely publicly funded systems. And so it's a crisis for us, and we are bound and determined to come through it.
And those vouchers, wasn't that more than $1 billion last mm-hmm. year for vouchers?
Yes. The amount of money going to the vouchers is actually more than the amount of money they're cutting from public schools. But yet, most of those new vouchers are for those students who are already in those schools. We have seen here in Hamilton County the number of vouchers that have been approved and given to families were those families who were already in those schools, and very few are new students receiving vouchers, because any student who receives the voucher through the expansion, they must pay the difference between what the voucher awards and what the final cost of their tuition is. So really, it is just kind of, think about it like a rebate if you're in those schools. Mm. The sad part about all of this is we had the Daroff case in the 90s that went back to the state Supreme Court. It was declared unconstitutional. Ohio's funding system. At the time of the Daroff case, Cincinnati Public received about 48% of the money from the state. Next year, we'll be receiving about 30%, and the year after that, about 25%. Due to the increases of the property values in Cincinnati. So we are being harmed on multiple fronts. I believe much of it is intentional, and it's harming all of the students in the state of Ohio.
We got a call from Charlie, too. He just wants to clarify, Superintendent Murphy, you said that COVID funding that you referred to, that was temporary. That was always going to be temporary. That was your understanding?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that is. Correct, Charlie. Thanks for calling with that question. We appreciate it. Okay, so we just heard some scary numbers there, Superintendent Murphy, the cuts in terms of the percentage of state funding that's going to Cincinnati Public Schools. What goes through your mind when you're not only trying to figure out this year's budget, but when you see that, you know, train kind of coming down the tracks in the years to come?
Yeah, it is definitely the unknown of what may come out of D.C., the unknown of what may come from our state even. And so that budget isn't scheduled to be passed quite yet. We're hoping for the end of the month and knowing by July 1. And so we're hoping for the least detrimental decision. At this point, we have been asking our supporters all year long to write their senators, write their representatives, and let them know that this is not fair, it's not right. And we would continue to encourage people to do that via social media, via even trips to the Capitol, if that's possible. So it really is the unknown and trying to be as conservative as you possibly can be. And also keeping hope alive, because we will find a way forward. We don't believe that this is gloom and doom, because we've been through difficulties in the past, and we will work really, really hard to get this figured out.
Well, we will continue our conversation after a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about Cincinnati Public Schools and the financial challenges facing the district. My guests are Cincinnati Public Schools Superintendent Shauna Murphy, Board of Education Vice President Eve Bolton, and Cincinnati Federation of Teachers President Julie Sellers. Do you have questions for them or do you have comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We do have a caller on the line. Hey, Tom, thanks so much. Oops, not sure if you can hear me. Hi, Tom, can you hear me? Well, I'm pressing the little button they told me to press. So I'm going to try something else. Hey, Tom, thanks so much for calling. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, comment. According to Google, which average salary at Cincinnati Public Schools was $69,953, which says 31% above the national average. And then also according to Google, as of June 7th, 2025, average annual pay for a private school teacher in Cincinnati is $44,678. So that is, my math is right, 56% more for the Cincinnati public. And, you know, most people I know would gladly send their kids to someplace like Elder, Mercy, Seton, these schools over Cincinnati Public School any day of the week. So they're getting half the pay, the private school teachers. I'm not saying that's right, but something seems wrong with the way the Cincinnati Public Schools are being run. They're getting the money, but they're not getting the results. So that's the comment. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening, Tom. Julie, you want to take that?
Well, one, the vouchers, they receive a higher dollar amount than what the public schools receive per student. But secondly, the teachers that in Cincinnati make more maybe nationally because we live in a higher cost of living area. So you have to have a salary that justifies the hiring that recruits and retains teaching staffs throughout the district. We have 3,000 teachers plus. And in order to do that, it is you have to make sure that you have a salary that is sustainable for families to live on.
Do public school teachers often have larger class sizes than private school teachers?
Yes, many times they do have a larger class size. They have a larger caseload. The Catholic schools and the private schools are much smaller. And many times it's people who are from within that parish and they're doing it as a mission type of a position. And actually, many of the people starting out in those private and parochial schools, they can't wait to move over and start working with the Cincinnati Public Schools or another public school within their area.
Did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I sure do. I think it's apples and oranges. Mm-hmm. First of all, the parochial schools, and thank goodness we have a great system of parochial schools. I think it's helped be one of the reasons Cincinnati is still around. But the reality is they are not held accountable the same way that public schools are. The other requirements for the professionals that are teaching in those schools is quite different than in the public schools regarding certification. Those special needs kids in those schools are usually serviced by Cincinnati Public School teachers. And the other reality is those schools are able to close their doors or close their classrooms.
So they don't have to take everybody.
We don't get to do that, and we don't want to do that. So it's a completely unusual comparison that doesn't work. But Julie's point about the fact that those per student dollars from the state that are public dollars, twice as much go to charters and the private schools than actually go to the public school kids. And we have 80% of the children in this state.
Hmm. Anything you want to add, Superintendent Murphy?
No, I agree with definitely what Julie and with Vice President Bolton had to say. I spent a good part of my early career in parochial schools. I enjoyed it, but there are differences. So on one hand, I'll be a little bit more specific. The school where I was blessed to graduate from and work in, the special needs students would be maybe a particular type of student. But we have kids who have so many needs that are, it's so much deeper. And they cannot be served in the parochial environment. But we do serve them in our environment. We are a very diverse student body. And we're very proud of our teaching corps. We're very proud of our neighborhoods. We're very proud of our families. And I don't know that every other school can necessarily say that exact thing.
Mm. Well, I appreciate that. I want to circle back just a little bit to school nurses. I know that Julie used, or I can't remember who said it now, you don't think that it'll still impact the care that they're getting. Superintendent Murphy, under this plan, will nurses be kind of traveling from school to school to make sure that the schools get the coverage they need?
That's a possibility, but we are still assessing and laying out our plan for the upcoming school year.
Okay. Plenty to work out over the next few weeks, I guess, getting ready for that school year. Board Member Bolton, I think you referred to this a little bit, but I want to talk about it in more direct terms. The House version of the state budget had a provision that would have created a ceiling on how much money school districts could carry over. You're laughing already thinking about this. I think it was 30%. The Senate, I believe, the Senate version maybe changed it to 50%. What can you talk about that and what, if any, impact that would have on Cincinnati Public Schools if that ceiling becomes part of the state budget?
Well, there's 600 and some school districts in the state of Ohio, and it has a great deal of impact on more than half of them, particularly the suburban districts, because the reality is they can carry that much over to get them through the budget cycle, if you will, of levies and the new levies and what have you. For us, it doesn't really pertain. We would be lucky to be able to have that kind of percentage of carryover, considering our costs and what we have to do. But the reality, too, is for the state to suggest that they're trying, again, not only to defund public education and fund private education, they're also trying to eliminate local control of schools. And they're taking power away from districts that are wonderful and be able to have 30% carryover because they've been careful about their money or what have you. They are also changing the way boards are supposed to be looked at. Some of this suggests that a board of education elections would be partisan. They want to get rid of nonpartisanship. So they're really trying to eliminate control. They're trying to defund schools and take not only local control away from the people that are elected, but more particularly the taxpayers that put us in these seats.
We were talking about vouchers and that type of funding earlier. We got a question from Dennis who wants to know why families can't just use the vouchers for public schools. Is that anything that's been discussed at the state level to your knowledge?
There's no cost to come to a public school, and so therefore there's no need to have a voucher. Anyone living within our school district is welcome to come to our schools, and there's no price tag to our community members for that.
That explains that. We got an email from Natalie who writes, in addition to the lack of adequate funding for public schools, various provisions in the budget bills as well as pending legislation will also limit schools' abilities to levy their communities. That gets into, I think, a question I was going to ask. I was going to swallow hard before asking it because it's so darn complicated about millage and changes in millage. Do you want to tackle that one?
I wish I could, but the reality for us is that, yes, part of the defunding of schools and the elimination of local control is now to change the way that we can levy the taxpayers. We are the taxing agent. And they are trying to change the interpretation of inside millage. They're trying to say that to be able to even vote as a board to have a levy would require 2/3 vote. They're even suggesting that when they take it to the voters, it would take 60% to agree to a tax levy.
60% of voters would
voters
have to approve. Trying,
and, you know, 60% of 5 or 10 people for pizza can't be achieved very easily. So it's an obvious, everything I think is just being thrown against the wall to see what they can do and how long the damage can last and to see if we come through it. There is an important legal case that has now been heard in Franklin County, and it's about vouchers and how that will go. And there will be a decision in the next several months that will make a difference. And then if that doesn't work, it's pretty obvious that this is going to be on a ballot probably as early as 26.
Superintendent Murphy, what would that do for planning for school districts if all these different changes to levies and millage and, you know, the way votes or the vote totals you need, what would that mean for the way you look into the future and try to plan?
Yeah, the biggest piece is it would mean that we would have to figure out how to get revenue in a different way, other than going to the taxpayers. We understand things are tight for everyone, and the taxpayers have reached out to the legislators and have said, hey, you got to do something about this. And this is the best they can come up with, is to remove dollars from public education to be able to teach our students and to be able to grow, develop, and mature young people. I just don't see how that is even fair or reasonable for our kids.
What are the other – I mean, you can't have just bake sales. I mean, like, what's the option? I mean, Julie, is this something you all have talked about?
We have talked about it. The elimination of the inside millage will have a negative impact on every single district in the state of Ohio.
And every single one. Inside millage just briefly.
The inside millage is the millage that comes through on your tax bill, but it isn't part of a levy. And so that millage is anywhere from 3 to 4% of that part that goes to the public schools on your tax bill. What they want to do is have a cap on that. And if for Cincinnati, it would be the difference of hundreds of jobs. There would not be safe staffing if some of these changes came into place. They want to also get rid of the 5-year emergency levies, which is what Cincinnati Public has always done, because in Cincinnati, we're kind of unusual to most other districts. Most districts put on a permanent levy, and that passes, and then it just is there forever. We come back to the voters usually every 5 years. Now we're starting to look at some after a couple of times to go 10 years. And then that money would be considered an emergency levy because it's temporary and not permanent. And if they get rid of that, that would be most of the levies that we have. So I don't know how we would operate under those restraints.
Well, let's talk about another provision in the state budget, and that's this idea that this provision that would require public schools to sell buildings that are under-enrolled by the state's definition, and districts would be required to sell those buildings at below market rates to charter schools or private schools. Superintendent Murphy, what would that mean for Cincinnati Public Schools?
Well, in CPS, we saw this coming. They've been talking about this for a while. And so our board's ad hoc committee came up with our growth plan. And we talked about this earlier in the year. And we now have our corridor system where we have repurposed many of our buildings that are, quote unquote, under-enrolled. And I'll say quote because it took a long time for them to talk about how that is defined, and there are a lot of arguments around how that should and could be defined. And so we did make some adjustments this past school year, entering into the 25-26 school year with the creation of our middle schools, so that those high schools that were really bursting at the seams could get a lot less pressure, and that some of our elementary buildings that were small in number, it's now evened out more across our district. And so we'll stay on top of that, watching our buildings, so that buildings, again, that the taxpayers have paid for will remain within our district.
Was that a key driver to the district's restructuring plan?
There were a few different things, but that was an element that we were completely aware of. Really, for us, it was about what's in the best interest of our children. So we've had models where our 7th and 8th grade students have been in pre-K 8 buildings, and more recently, more 7 to 12 buildings. But we believe that their social-emotional needs require them to have their own schoolhouses with teachers who can really focus on that middle-aged child. And so that was truly the driver for why we did it. It just so happens at the same time, the state talked about taking buildings away.
Hmm. And how, what kind of reaction have you been getting to the that new middle school structure?
We're very excited about it. We have new principals who are on fire about this. We have been engaging with the community. We have had open houses where people can come and visit the school buildings. We have had opportunities for young people to come in and come to the schools to see where their new schools will be. And we are just very, very excited about what this will mean for kids.
Yeah, what are you hearing from
and
teachers?
Actually,
too?
The teachers are excited about it also. I mean, I was so surprised at how happy the teachers who were working in the 7 to 12 building said, yeah, we'll go and we will work as a team at this new middle school. So they already have a team of teachers who are moving together from one high school to one of the middle schools. And this summer, they've had professional development where they got together. They were making their plans for the new school year. There was one school last year that was piloted. It was very successful. We saw great gains. The students were so much calmer. And I just think it's the best thing for our kids.
Okay. Well, we are going to be back after a short break. We'll talk some about the new Walnut Hills entrance exam, and we will wrap up our conversation about Cincinnati public schools. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back to finish up our conversation about Cincinnati public schools and the challenges facing the school district. My guests are Cincinnati Public Schools Superintendent Shauna Murphy, Board of Education Vice President Eve Bolton, and Cincinnati Federation of Teachers President Julie Sellers. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Superintendent Murphy, one of the things that came up, I guess it's been a few months ago, time can be a bit of a blur for me, but was that the district was making some changes to the Walnut Hills High School entrance exam. Can you walk us through those changes?
Sure. So right now, all of our sixth grade students in our school district take the Iowa test, and that gives them a national norm to determine their ability to be placed into Walnut Hills High School should they choose to attend that school. At the same time, all of our students also take what we call our iReady assessments. And so some of this is to avoid test fatigue. But when we looked at the iReady assessments, we saw really strong comparisons between that test and the Iowa test. And so our testing committee that has administrators and teachers participating took a look at those tests, took a look at our results over the past several years, and determined that the students did just as well with the iReady. And so we thought, well, I wonder if we can drop the Iowa test. And so we took that proposal to the board. The board supported that after some conversation and some thoughts around it. And so now we will just use that iReady test to make a determination of ability and eligibility for the Walnut Hills High School.
That makes sense. So does that mean a lower threshold for students to qualify?
No. Actually, it was very similar. It was surprisingly similar. We got very, very excited about it. And it actually allows for there to be more Cincinnati Public School students who are eligible and who will do well at the school. And those are some of the markers that we looked at over the past, I think we looked at 3 or 4 years before we made the recommendation.
Walnut Hills High School is such a highly regarded school. I mean, I think U.S. News and World Report says number one in Ohio. There are always families knocking down the door to try to get their children in there, including children who've been attending private schools. Do those private school students take the iReady test, do you know?
Or? The students outside of our school district will continue to use their Iowa skill set testing. And so there still is an open enrollment period in our district. It happens to be the month of April. And so if those students are interested, then there is still the opportunity. Those young people, families may be moving into our district over the summer, and there is still an opportunity for those students as well.
Gotcha. You could look at their tests and figure out.
That's correct.
So does this mean there could be more students who qualify for to attend Walnut, and how can you stretch that building?
We are excited about there being more students to qualify, and how to stretch that building will be a discussion that administration and the board has, and maybe that we also follow up with the community.
Okay.
Soon.
So there may be a way to make room for more students at Walnut Hills?
We'll figure it out.
Exciting. Well, it sounds like we're going to have you back to talk about that. And it sounds like, will this have any impact on the quality of education at Walnut Hills, which is so highly regarded? It sounds like you're saying we're still going to have, you're still going to have high standards to get in there.
This will definitely be a classical approach to education for young people with high standards.
Okay. Have you heard much feedback about this, Board Vice President Bolton?
Surprisingly few comments. And the last time we talked about the entrance exam, there was a great deal of discussion. But I think with the Iowa test, people knew that it hadn't been normed since, I think, 2017. I think the fatigue piece was important. And there's a growing respect for that iReady effort. And I think that made people feel much better. There are, I think, four Walnut Hills graduates on the school board.
Oh, really?
I definitely am outnumbered. And it was remarkably well received by them.
Yeah. Have teachers expressed any concerns about potentially larger class sizes if more kids qualify?
Their class sizes are always full. And they have so many students there, but they will figure it out. I did not have any complaints from the teachers about the change from Iowa to the iReady.
Okay.
I think having teachers on the committee making the decisions who are seeing the test firsthand, I think that makes a big decisional help.
Mm-hmm. That seems like an important part to mm-hmm. your approach generally, Superintendent Murphy.
Absolutely. Every single time. I mean, the teachers have the biggest impact on our young people, and we know this and we believe this. So you have to include them in the conversation, include them in the decision making, and then everything is done in the best interest of the kids.
So getting back to these financial concerns that we've spent so much of the hour talking about, I want to ask each of you, what potential cuts at the state level are you most worried about? And what does the public need to know about what's at stake? I'll start with you, Vice President Bolton.
At the state level, our concern is the general operations dollars that are not going to be given to us because they have stopped the fair funding formula for all intents and purposes. So that's general. At the federal level, our issue is not waiting for the retribution from the Trump administration, but indeed already the Trump budget has made some significant changes for those dollars that go to federal dollars that go to our kids who are economically in need. And they have eliminated completely any monies for professional development in their budget, and more particularly, a complete zero of any federal dollars for those young people that whose first language is not English. It is so anti-immigrant and refugee, it's appalling if people knew it. And that's just the budget. That's even before we get a payback because we're standing in favor of all of our kids.
What does that mean in terms of dollars? I mean, how much money has the district gotten in the past to help with all those things that the federal government won't help with anymore?
The superintendent may know better, or Julie, but I think we usually have somewhere around $40 to $50 million
in grants. It all depends which section, which line of the title dollars mm-hmm. that come from the feds. So each one is going to be impacted. So the dollars going for students with special needs, those dollars will be cut by a percentage. The students who are multilingual language learners, those dollars are going to be cut completely. And the poverty dollars are going to be cut by, I think, across the board, 20%. Now, those dollars do go to the state, and then the state distributes them. So we haven't even seen what the impact is going to be for us for next year. The difficult thing is we're staffing the schools and making the budget now, and we really started in January and February without even knowing what our budget is going to be. That's the difficult part.
Also difficult for me is I was in school in the late 80s, early 90s, and the way education is funded in Ohio was ruled unconstitutional. It's still unconstitutional. And the adults are not able to come together and figure out how to make it fair, how to make it right. Quite frankly, and I'm a huge Bengals fan, We can figure out how to build stadiums and provide money for that, but we can't figure out how to properly educate and fund education for our kids, and we have to do better as adults.
You know, you mentioned that, Superintendent Murphy, and the state Senate budget included $600 million for Cleveland Browns football facility from unclaimed funds, the state's unclaimed funds. You know, that's a one-time source of money, but what could that amount of money do for public education?
Our entire general fund budget is about $640 million.
So spread across the state, that could help a little bit, huh?
That could help tremendously.
Yeah.
I think we need to have the legislators have a priority of the funding, because right now, currently, we can't afford as a state through the taxpayers to fund three separate school systems. There's no efficiencies with that. You're paying for administrative costs and different forms of funding for charter schools with no accountability, and we see them close day by day. The students are not learning. They're failing at the highest rates ever. Then they come back to the public schools behind. We're funding now the vouchers at another rate of what they're cutting from the public schools, and we are funding the public schools at less dollars, and those dollars are the dollars that are constitutional that must be spent. The other two systems are not constitutional, and they don't have the accountability that we have.
And you're making a strong case there for public schools, but I think there are people who are listening. We heard a call from somebody questioning pay levels, for example, who don't have necessarily a high opinion of public schools. They think, my kids have gone to private schools, you know, the elders of the world that this gentleman mentioned. So what, you know, Superintendent Murphy, make your case. Why should even those people be interested in adequate funding for public schools?
And think of the schoolhouse as the hub of the community. And so any community that you live in within this city, you want it to do well. You want it to be healthy. If we want to have healthy kids, we have to have healthy families. In order to have healthy families, we have to have healthy communities. We have to have a healthy city. And so not supporting public education weakens the infrastructure of our city.
I would add, if I could, that was perfect, but I would add, we've been here almost 200 years through any kinds of crisis, and we're getting ready to go into our third century. The reality is the economic development of this region is dependent upon the success of Cincinnati Public Schools. It's as simple as that, whether it's workforce or whether it's what kind of neighbors you're going to have, and maybe as simple as what kind of safety within your neighborhoods. So everybody has an important role to play and a need for a healthy public system.
Superintendent Murphy, when will the Board of Education be talking about the budget next?
June the 23rd. Monday, June 23rd.
Okay. And if people are listening now and they have concerns about what we've been talking about, especially I'm thinking at the state level, as that conference committee is happening and they're trying to decide what's in the final state budget, what are you telling people? What are you recommending?
I'm asking that people would still continue to reach out to their state senator, to their representative, either by phone, snail mail, email, social media, whatever works for them, speaking in support of public education, in particular Cincinnati Public Schools and the 35,000 children it represents.
Julie, any advice that you have for folks?
I think that everybody should be reaching out to every single legislator, and everybody they know should be reaching out to a legislator so that we can get fair school funding for not just Cincinnati Public Schools, but for every public school child in the state of Ohio.
Do you want to add anything to that?
I would just add, besides the legislature in Columbus and the Congress in Washington, D.C., I think greater and greater cooperation, even among local entities, is crucial. Between urban and suburbans, between the city and CPS, wherever we can find ways to collaborate, we need to do that because we are under assault.
Superintendent Murphy, you mentioned we were talking a little bit before about the middle school plan and the bit of a restructuring. You said that's going well. There are a lot of factors at play in that. What can you give us an update? Are there still decisions to be made along those lines, still work that you all are doing to put all that together?
Oh, it's moving. It's moving. we have selected all of the principals. That was pretty much finished February. The staffing is just about complete. There may be a couple of few vacancies that we need to take care of. We have done the professional development for our principals. We are doing that development right now with our teachers. Students have selected their school. We're ready for August 20th.
It's amazing how busy the summer can be, huh? Everybody thinks y'all have the summer off. It doesn't. Can't feel that way to you.
Not at all.
Yeah. Well, this has been a terrific conversation. We've got just a few seconds left. Julie, any parting words for everybody who's listening?
I think that everybody who's listening understands the crisis that has been created at the state level and federally with attacks on public education. And just to be there and reach out to support everything, because our students deserve it.
Mm. Anything you'd like to add, Eve?
Support your local school district. Mm-hmm. Not just Cincinnati Public, but the other 21 local school districts in Hamilton County. They need your support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lots of people advocating for their public schools right now, that's for sure. Well, I have been talking with Cincinnati Public Schools Superintendent Shauna Murphy, Board of Education Vice President Eve Bolton, and Cincinnati Federation of Teachers President Julie Sellers. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you'll want to hear our show tomorrow, because we will be talking about state funding solutions for those stadiums that you were talking about, Superintendent Murphy. So that'll be on the show tomorrow, Cincinnati Edition. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. And if you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.